Hi, everybody. We're officially recording. Welcome to the National Center for Family Philanthropy's monthly topical call for the Community Foundation Family Philanthropy Network. This call series is on the second Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern for no more than an hour. This is your opportunity to learn with your peers, ask questions of each other, provide your own tips and insights on the topic of the day. I'm Catherine Scott, your Director of Programs for the National Center for Family Philanthropy and your Community Foundation call facilitator for today. Let's start with a couple quick logistics, if that's okay, and then we'll get to what you guys are actually here for. So I apologize for the canned message. Your lines are open. They are not muted. What that means is those of you with a great puppy baby background noise, go ahead and familiarize yourself with the mute button on your phone. The mute button on your phone will mute you. If for some reason something occurs, I can forcibly mute you, but I try not to do that. Remember to say your name and city when you ask a question or offer your own insight.
I'm sort of multitasking.
Oh, sorry. Are you doing the We're recording. We're recording this call and we'll add it to your network's Dropbox resources for anyone who missed it. Just let me know if you need help accessing your Dropbox of resources. Also, just a heads up that all those materials are actually also available at ncfp.org now, so you don't need to go to Dropbox, but you still can if you're settled to. Today's call is about getting started on your family philanthropy journey. We are awesomely joined by three amazing speakers today. So we're joined by Oregon Community Foundation, Jennifer Curry. We're joined by Donna Curry from Akron Community Foundation and Amy Beth Dudley. And so we're just excited to be able to learn from all three of them about their journey and time. So why don't we go ahead, if it's okay, and just have everyone share your name, your city name, and if there's anything specific you want to learn on the call today. So, for example, I'm Katie Scott from Washington, D.C., from NCFP, and I just am excited to learn today. So name, city name, and any specific question you want to answer today. Laura, I had muted you because your background is noisy, so I'm going to unmute you now, and we'll just go ahead and let people go ahead and call off. I'll help facilitate. So I'm going to call first. Lauren, do you want to go, and then Treat?
I don't know. Can you hear me? You can hear me? Laura Menge, Greater Cincinnati Foundation, and I'm just here to learn a bit more about family philanthropy.
Thank you. Lauren Domino? Domino, sorry.
Sure. I'm Lauren Domino, Director of Philanthropy Services at Seattle Foundation in Seattle, and we've been in building out our family philanthropy services pretty intentionally over the last, maybe 5 years in particular, and I'm just always looking for new ideas, hearing what other people are doing.
Perfect. Treat, you're up next, and then Rebecca, if you can, Rebecca. So Treat.
Hi, my name is Treat Harvey. I work at Triangle Community Foundation. I'm in Durham, North Carolina. Well, in Research Triangle Park, but the Durham part. We're at a community foundation, but want to work more with intergenerational families. And so I think this is the year that we are finally going to put in place some formal programs. My fingers are crossed on that. So I'm trying to learn as much as I can before we launch that.
That's awesome, Treat. Rebecca, can you talk from where you are traveling to share who you are, any questions in your city name? Okay. Rebecca was going to be in a noisy spot, so that's okay. Our folks from 206 and then Barrett. That's you. Hello? Okay,
I just heard about my colleague. The other 206er is probably my colleague, Jen, who looks like she's just dialed in. So she sent me an IM.
Perfect. Well, that's awesome. And more colleagues from Seattle is all the more the merrier. Barrett, do you want to say hi as well?
Sure. Hi. Barrett Kreiss. Here in Atlanta, and I have with me Cheyenne Ransom, who is our summer fellow for the summer. She's spending a couple of weeks with us in our philanthropy department learning about the work we do, and this is a perfect phone call for her to get to hear more about what's going on with everybody around the field in family philanthropy. So thanks.
Thank you. Kara? Kara Pandichit? Okay, Kara, I can see you on Zoom. I can't hear you, so we're going to go ahead and skip over you. If you can unmute yourself, we would love you to say hi. Al Nugent and Lee Davis. Al Nugent?
I think you might be referring to me, Linda Nguyen. Is that right?
I can only see computer names, so possibly, but go ahead. Either way.
Sure. This is Linda Nguyen from Mountain View, California, from Silicon Valley Community Foundation.
Thank you. And any specific questions you want people to answer today?
No, we're really just getting started about thinking through what types of services we're going to provide in the area of family philanthropy. So I'm just looking to learn.
Perfect. Thank you. And sorry, I'm trying to call out people's like usernames, which is not going great, but that's okay. Thank you. Lee and Vicki. Lee, do you want to go next? Lee Davis and then Vicki Andrews.
Sure. This is Lee Davis. I'm in Norfolk, Virginia. We cover Southeastern Virginia. I'm in the Hampton Roads Community Foundation, and I'm here with Jillian Pruitt, who's my donor services associate at the foundation. And we are, we don't have a formal program, but we're just getting started and talking to some of our multi-generational donor advice fund holders about doing some family philanthropy work.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Vicki and A. Wakefield. So Vicki, you're up next.
I don't think I have a microphone, but hi.
We can hear you.
Oh, okay, good. I wasn't sure. I'd never done that before. So Director of Donor Services at the North Texas Community Foundation. We've been working for a family with families for a couple of years on family meetings, but we're always looking for great ideas. So Amy Radcliffe and I are here in Fort Worth.
Awesome. A. Wakefield and A. Radcliffe. Okay, you guys are both muted, so we're going to skip over you for now. Abby Temkin?
Hi, I'm on. I just can't get the screen to work, so I'm on both on the screen watching the slides and then also by telephone.
So. Thanks, Abby. Nancy, do you want to say hi?
Hi guys, I'm the Community Foundation of Georgia. I'm here with my colleague, Julia Woods, and we're excited about the new widget and just looking to come up with new ideas to roll that out here.
Cool, Ellen Grill. Okay, we can't hear Ellen. We're gonna go ahead and say Greater Des Moines Community Foundation and Greater Milwaukee. Either of you wanna share and say hi, especially if you have a question to share.
Hi, this is Des Moines. We have three of us here, Sarah Reichert, Jordan Richardson, and Lynn Yance. We're all on the charitable giving team, and we are looking to find more ideas on engaging our families and how to engage that next generation of family members specifically.
Perfect. Thank you. What about our folks from Milwaukee?
So this is Mary Kay Mark from the Greater Milwaukee Foundation in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and we're interested in how people balance the amount of time spent with families with getting compensation, if any, for that time.
Thank you. And we have another a person from Chicago.
If you're referring to me, this is Bob Eichinger, part of the Philanthropic Services Department and colleague of Abby's, and here to gather more information along with Abby.
Perfect. And Scott and Kelly, do either of you want to say hi?
This is Scott Kaplan from the Tidewater Jewish Foundation in Virginia Beach, just a few miles from my colleagues down the road in Norfolk at the Hampton Roads Community Foundation. Similar things to what they said, trying to work further with multi-generation families that are involved, in particular with donor-advised funds, and how to further engage them in the second and third generations.
Thank you, Scott. Kelly, do you want to say hi? Kelly with an I.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm Kelly Doyle. I'm with the Greater Kansas City Community Foundation, and I'm actually relatively new here at the foundation, so I'm here to learn and just kind of jam as much information as I can into my brain.
Awesome. And we have a few people from NCFP staff, so we're going to have them all say hi real quick so they can say their name. So Miles, I know you're here on the computer. Do you want to say hi? He may not have the capacity. Miles is our summer intern who's here to learn about community foundations and philanthropy. We also have two staff in my office with me.
Hi, I'm Frances. I'm the development manager. I'm relatively new at NCFP, so I'm just learning about our programming.
And hi, my name is Jen Carino. I'm the program coordinator at NCFP. I'm here to learn as well.
I'm outing them. So why don't we just go ahead and hear from our fabulous speakers for about 5 minutes each, and then we'll just open it up for questions. They're just going to share about their family philanthropy programs and how they got to be where they are today. So Donna, if you want to kick us off, and then we'll go to Amy, Beth, and then we'll go to Jennifer. So Donna, do you want to go ahead and share?
Sure. Thank you for asking me. And so I'm at Akron Community Foundation in Akron, Ohio. And our Center for Family Philanthropy really stemmed from a commitment to donor services and to keeping the next generation connected to this community where oftentimes the wealth was created, and to help establish a commitment to place with future generations of our donor advised fund holders and private family foundations in the area. And the Center for Family Philanthropy was part of a 5-year strategic plan, which really started with our donor advised fund holders' request to have family meetings and include their children and grandchildren in their giving and their grant making. So originally our Chief Development Officer, Margaret, who's the Vice President of Development, and our Director of Development, Laura, who's also in charge of our professional advisor relations, received the 2164 training and began facilitating these multi-generational family meetings. And then I was brought on about a year into the strategic plan to kind of create a formal center, create the administrative processes for the center, and develop a menu of services, develop the programs, program content, and curriculum that we'd offer through the center, and then to work with our marketing department to create a marketing plan and a brand for the center. We decided to brand the center a little bit differently than the branding for the Community Foundation, to make it a separate entity but part of the Community Foundation. So what we're looking at for our center is to make sure, also the last thing I was brought on to do was to create an event that would launch the center so that the community and our fund holders, professional advisors, and the private family foundation trustees knew that the center existed and had an opportunity to learn about what it was and what the services were that we offered. So I was asked to talk about what are the services we currently offer. And so the first, of course, is these facilitated family meetings. And we have 4 of our development staff that are 2164 trainers. And along with myself and the other 3, we're working with our marketing department, and we're creating workbooks and materials that are used during the meetings. We've also incorporated a lot of the 2164 tools that we've used at those trainings, and we white labeled them to use our new branding. And we use those during the meetings. And then Laura, who created our professional advisor committee, has really brought them in, and they've played a pivotal role in bringing us multi-generational families that want to have these family meetings. So we've kind of positioned ourselves as a community foundation and our center as their kind of back office philanthropy department. And so that it would be a value-added service of using those financial advisors that we will facilitate family meetings on philanthropy. So they do all of the financial planning, and once they've decided with their clients how much of their resources will be put toward philanthropy, then we come in and help them basically give the money away, do the granting. Another area for services that we've created and a target are these private family foundations that exist in our community that we serve. And we've created a a private family converted for an amount to be a private foundation. So as we're putting it, like the juice isn't worth the squeeze to have all of this reporting requirements and 990 filings and trustees and meetings when these private family foundations have under $2 million in assets. When we talk to them about converting them to a donor-advised fund. We also have a companion fund, which is basically a donor-advised fund where they can put their 5% in at the end of the year so that they can satisfy their requirements by the IRS, and then it gives them a whole year to decide on where they want to grant the money. So that's a big target of our family philanthropy mission, is to bring in these private family foundations. Another service that we're offering through the center is our new Institute for Emerging Philanthropists, which is a next-gen philanthropy education program. And it's a 9-month program for donors that are between 25 and 45 years old who want to learn how to be strategic and effective philanthropists. And that group of people have been nominated and then chosen from either the children and grandchildren of our donor advised fund holders or the children and grandchildren of the private family foundation trustees, up-and-coming professional advisors, and up-and-coming, what we're calling future wealth creators or future C-suite executives in the big companies here in Akron to participate in that class. So another one of my, what I was asked to do the first year that I started with the foundation was to have this launch event. And so on May 16th, we had 850 people attend a concert and conversation with Peter Buffett here at E.J. Thomas Hall in Akron, where we were able to formally introduce our center and introduce the 18 people that will be in our inaugural class of the Center for Family Philanthropy, and also our plans, which we've just broken ground for, to increase our physical space in our building to include a dedicated space for the Center for Family Philanthropy, where we're going to have meeting rooms that will have video conferencing capacity so that out-of-town family members can participate in these meetings. It's going to have a resource library for our donors and also for nonprofits in the area. And it's also going to be a place where we're going to be able to hold a master copy of each family's philanthropy meetings and history so that future generations can come back and see who was at those meetings, what was the granting history of their family, the mission statement of their family, their legacy plan, and also they can see the worksheets that were done in the handwriting of their grandparents and grandparents so that they can see why their fund was created, what were the organizations they cared about, and what the mission was for their family's giving, so that there's always a place that they could come back to where we'll kind of be the keepers of that family history here at the center. So Donna, I think that's kind of a brief overview.
That's awesome, Donna. Sorry, you're one of the only, Donna's been researching physical spaces and libraries and resource centers. So if you are looking to set up a physical space, Donna is like your resource and truly the person that knows the most about them. Why don't we go ahead and have Amy Beth share just an explanation of where her foundation is and how they got to be there. And I'll say, I picked folks at different life stages for a specific reason. We do have the honor of having Barrett and Lawrence Foundations and others that are here that are at totally different life stages as well. So I think this, like, if you have a question, regardless of where you are, there are other people at your space. So Amy Beth, do you want to share just kind of where you guys are and how you got to be there and what your foundation has been up to, just to give folks some grounding?
Sure, yeah. Thanks, Katie. And I'll say this. there's certainly those that are much further down the path that we look to and continue to look to for guidance, but also looking for those that are kind of where we are so we can have cohorts and buddies all along our path to family philanthropy and family philanthropy services. So as Katie said, I'm Amy Beth Dudley. I work for the Community Foundation of Greater Memphis, and I'm Director of Donor Services. I've been here just right at 2 years. We are in our 50th anniversary year. So some of that 50th anniversary is kind of plays a role in this. But our community foundation has historically, like many community foundations, been focused on certainly excellent customer, excellent service. But for us, most of that work was transactional, grant processing, in and out, like a lot of folks. In 2017, we undertook a donor satisfaction survey. And the results... There we are. It's party in here. The results from that really confirmed our belief that we were certainly effective and efficient in our grants processing and that our donors trust us and we were doing an overall really great job. However, and certainly in donor services, we saw a very clear need to expand our offering to donors beyond just the ability to process, you know, process their payment. And that survey then took the next step and really informed our next endeavor, which was our strategic plan. And all of this truly leading up to our 50th anniversary and rolling out our next phase in life. That strategic plan included input like any strategic plan from donors, stakeholders, the community, et cetera, et cetera. And those conversations, and certainly a lot of internal conversations, our strategic need to expand our offerings to our donors really became crystal clear. At the same time, our development director, Caroline Kubler, who's here with me in the office, was exploring ways to better connect to our donors outside of our sort of traditional pool of donors that we have pulled from in the past. A lot of those folks were sort of mainline Memphians, they've been around for a really long time, knew of the community foundation, but there's a whole other wide world of donors we needed to be able to connect with. And in her development role and sort of a consultative role as well, Caroline trained to become a 2164 facilitator and has done that. I will be taking that course in the fall with the plan also not just for us to connect to potential donors, but also to deepen conversations and connections with our existing donors to begin to have this family philanthropy. And also in all of this, what we've been talking about internally a lot are those families that we have, and we have several, many multi-generational families that run the gamut from, you know, the grandparents are still relatively young, therefore the grandchildren are little kids to the grandchildren are in their 40s and 50s and beyond. So we think we have a good slate of families that are sort of willing participants in our endeavor, that they will be a good resource for us and also just be willing to kind of go along with us as we learn, and they're interested in learning the same as we are. Been talking with them a lot. We've been beginning to share our involvement with NCFP, and I think that will certainly further inform what services we decide finally to offer. What the content and the structure of that will certainly be our next steps in our planning as we begin to really listen to our donors and hear what they have to say and hear what their needs are. So obviously we're still in the initial planning phases, and our involvement with NCFP has been and certainly will continue to be crucial to all of our family philanthropy planning going forward. Thanks,
Amy Beth. I'm just going to loop folks in. I had to mute a couple of folks because I tried to make sure you guys can hear each other, which happens when we get a big party call. We have 38 people on the phone, so picture that old school party call that when you see it in the old movies. So I'll unmute you guys for Q&A, and don't worry, I'll make sure to do that. But we'll go ahead and have Jennifer Curry share so you can hear where her life stage is and kind of just where her foundation has been. So Jennifer, to you.
Thank you so much, Katie, and thank you all, Donna and Amy. That was really helpful, and you helped set a great stage because I heard a lot of similarities for us and our work. Our foundation is 45 years old, and we've always had some families we've worked with. Some families we've worked with a long time have a family business, and they've worked with us in part to bring the next gen in to work together as they envision them taking over family businesses. About 5 years ago, when we were going through a strategic plan, I was tasked with helping develop how we might formalize and intentionalize this work. And we proposed creating what we were calling the Family Giving Center as kind of a separate entity, supporting donors who have funds with us and also fee-for-service consulting work for folks with family foundations. Our board and staff were very interested in seeing how we could help folks who may not do their philanthropy through us, because part of our mission is to improve philanthropy or promote effective philanthropy. So about 3 years ago, our board approved the business plan, which I do think NCFP has in the Dropbox. And at the time, we were proposing funds that were $2 million or larger in-house would kind of get free services unless they got really hefty. Like last year, we had research assistants for our largest fund doing environmental research, and they made a grant to pay for that. But everything else we do for them, we just consider part of that. If a fund is under $2 million and a donor wants these services, our thought is that we'd probably propose a fee. We set up hourly rates based on staff title or staff job classification. We haven't deployed that yet, but we do have a series of family foundations we're doing consulting for using that model. We're going through a rebrand right now, and as part of it, it is not going to be called the Family Giving Center. It will be called OCF Family Giving, and it's considered a service offering. So it's a shift from what was originally proposed. We've got a new logo, and so now we're able to start developing materials. Up until now, we haven't had those. So for me, a big part of our next phase is business development, work with our professional advisors, and then we just had our first big event for donors in addition to hosting 2164 last week for their managing family dynamics and talking about money. And many of the donors in the room filled out a survey and said they'd like to find out how we can help them. So that will be our first broader step of follow-up and figuring out what folks want. We're busy with the work, and it's interesting to see how many people are interested in it now that we're talking about it more. Even though we've had it all this time, we'd only been kind of having small one-on-one conversations. Things our board did to help us, they gave us 3 years of operating reserves to build up the program. And as part of that, we got to hire a coordinator who helps us manage the work, helped us develop an intake process. We've got intake forms because we're sometimes asking folks in other departments to help. So we have a system to make sure they have the bandwidth for it. And then we had four families or individuals set up endowed permanent funds to underwrite the work, $1 million. We call them our founding families. And part of that was possible because there's a family we work with. The G2 dad had been on our board, and he and his wife had created an endowed administrative fund for us. So our past VP, who retired last year, was able to go to his kids and ask if they'd do that for us to support family giving. And then we went to some other families. So those were some things we didn't know we'd have when we started that helped us. It enabled us to get many of our staff trained in 2164. Most of the relationship managers have now been up through what used to be called 201. And I should stop talking.
Perfect. Thank you all for speaking and sharing. I'm going to go ahead and unmute all lines. I know we had somebody traveling, so if I need to mute them back again, I will. But I just want to open this up for questions for anyone. So you can ask anybody who spoke, or you can ask anybody else you want who's on the call. Some of you are brand new. Some of you have one family. Some of you have no family yet working on this. And some of you have tons of families and are figuring out how to serve them.
Jennifer, this is Lauren in Seattle. I would love to see that intake form in terms of making sure you're capturing the resources you think you're going to need from other departments. Because I feel like sometimes that's where we hit some pain points where we'll take on work, but then we might need something from our finance team or, you know, and it's not on their radar necessarily. So that could be a really helpful planning tool for us. We do more and more of these family sessions and kind of thinking around assets like that.
Absolutely.
I have a question for the whole group, another question. So one of the biggest challenges we're facing is sort of just how spread out as subsequent generations get across the globe. And I'm curious what tools and techniques people have found helpful for moving work forward when you can't all be together in the same room. So things that you guys have found successful. I've only done one like Zoom meeting video thing before. It was a little clunky. And we're trying to find new solutions for doing more of that work so that we don't have to rely on having everyone in the same room at the same time.
Come on. This is Catherine. I put together a list of resources for one of our family foundations for their board members. So I'll go ahead and share that list of resources. It's all the different technology resources. And they're working with their board and kind of like just the tools and systems. They were actually asking for something free, but I listed all the paid ones too. So I'll share that if that's helpful, including Basecamp and Slack and kind of some of those type of out-of-the-box resources that some of our families are considering sharing that sometimes work better and sometimes don't. So I'll share those if that's okay. I will also tag all the resources that we've discussed on this call. And when you log into ncfp.org, you'll actually be able to see this call's recording as well as all the resources. So if I can have that resource from Jennifer Curry, I will tag it. It will be on the website. You can log in. You can see it. It's the new Dropbox, only smarter. So you guys should all know how to do that. What other questions do you guys have for each other?
This is Treat in Durham. Am I muted? Can you hear me? Sorry.
You're good. We can hear you.
Okay. So everyone, it seems like everyone is taking the 2164 training, and I think that's great, and I have a plan to take it myself. It seems to be industry standard at this point. Is anyone else finding other viable trainings, or is that kind of it right now?
This is big.
Those of you who do it, you know, did you look into other possibilities or?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. That's where Amy Radcliffe and I, Amy's going this fall. I think they're sort of the leader, and they have a specific community foundation training now that they haven't had before. So that's really nice that they're focusing really directly on community foundations.
Yeah. Okay, good. It's good to hear confirmation. I also was looking at, you know, San Francisco in September, where hotels cost $400 to $600, and I thought, this is, you know, should I be doing something else?
They will negotiate to come out to Jeff will tell you about it. We've done it as well, but they'll negotiate to come out to you if you can round up enough from your local community, maybe other wealth advisors who might be interested. So if it makes sense, if there's enough people on your team who need to be certified, that could be something to look into. What I will just say about the 2164 in terms of the trainings and tools out there, yeah. I think there are a lot of tools you can use out there, and certainly, you know, Seattle Foundation has developed our own workbook, toolkit, and I know a lot of you all have been developing things too. What I like about the 2164 is it's really the underlying theory and practice that enables you to be a better facilitator in those meetings. And you can plug in the tools that you're building for yourself or use their tools. And we certainly utilize a couple of their tools, and then we have a lot of our own. But I think when I've seen our team go through it, it really helps them slow down and think about the best approach to serving each client that we're working with. And it's really just that underlying theory. So that's what I like. It's not just that here's some fun tools you can try out. It really is the theory piece that I don't know if you get. I don't know of other places other than maybe general facilitation training type things, but specific to philanthropy, which is great.
Yeah. Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Treat. There's a staff member at Oakland Community Foundation that's literally been through every training. So she's been to the CAP training as well, and the Certified Financial Advisor, the CFA. So yeah. If you're interested, I'm happy to connect you to her. When Tony talks about her, she's like the person that's done it all. So if you're wanting to cost compare, I'm happy to connect you.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thanks.
Is it appropriate for me to shout out NCFP's efforts to give us this peer space? And they've been great about helping facilitate, because we've gotten a lot out of sharing information and practicing with other folks in the community foundation field. That's been incredibly helpful.
And there are facilitation resources from our last free workshop in the Dropbox toolkit and on the website. Also as well, you guys have a free day. This will be my advertisement. How's that for our party line? You have a free day and a half long training in Chicago. So if you don't want to pay a high registration fee, come on out to Chicago, October 15th and 16th, and hang with your community foundation peers. We pay for everything except for dinner and your hotel night. It's all included in your NCFP membership. You guys are also welcome to stay for the forum. If you stay for the forum, you will have to pay the registration fee. If you have questions, comments, concerns about that, please let me know. But do know that that is definitely a resource for you. These topical calls are monthly. They're included in your membership, as well as coming to some of our peer networks. We have one on Engaging the Next Generation tomorrow. If you're interested in coming tomorrow, talking about resources with family foundations that are working to engage the next gen, it's from 1 to 2 o'clock tomorrow. I'm getting a motion from our staff that I mistimed. 1 to 2 o'clock tomorrow, you're welcome to come. So please note those are all available to you, and thank you. Great. What other questions do you guys have for each other? It can be anything.
I'm good.
Anybody have any other questions?
Caroline has a question. Hi, Donna. It's Caroline Kubler. I'm just curious. I want to hear more. What's the follow-up or the reaction/response to the Buffett speaker?
Hi, Caroline. You know, it was amazing. Honestly, people really enjoyed it, the presentation. And we've gotten a lot of phone calls about the center and about what we're doing here. And he really was great making a connection that, you know, if you want to be a philanthropist, you don't have to be bringing water to a third world country like my dad, he was saying, talking about Warren, that you really start right in your own community. And he talked about his and his wife, once they received and the knowledge that they were about to be running a $1 billion foundation, and they went all around the world researching issues, that they realized there was a lot of issues right in their own hometown in Kingston, New York, and that they went to the community foundation to find out what those issues were and who were the organizations that were helping to alleviate those issues in their community. So that was a really nice tie with the community foundation. But it was great. I think people loved it, and the turnout was amazing. Right up until the last minute, I was having a hard time believing that 850 people were actually going to show up, and they did. So it was great, and it gave us an opportunity to announce our center and let people know that we existed and that's what we were doing, and really differentiate us from the commercial donor advised fund platforms through the services that we offer.
Can I ask a question for those of you in different communities? Fidelity Charitable seems to be doing, when you said differentiating our services, Donna, Fidelity Charitable seems to be doing some of that work, maybe with their higher net worth donors. But you know, in other communities, are they? I mean, I'm an RTP in North Carolina. Is that Have you all heard that this is something you're working on in your communities? Or
I know when I was at 2164 training, there was some Fidelity people doing the training with us. And I know here in my community in Akron, a couple of the banks are offering these type of multi-generational family philanthropy services, but only to their ultra high net worth clients. So for us in Akron, we're kind of filling a void with where I think for the bank we were just talking to, it had the families had to have a net worth of over $25 million to be considered in part of those services. Whereas we'll give the services to almost all of our donor advised fund holders, at least at this point we are, until we see if that becomes overwhelming and we're not able to. But right now we're able to service anyone who's interested in the services that we have.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
This is Jennifer. We're aware of that as well. And I think part of what we differentiate, in addition to having our folks who are staffed and trained in facilitating and family dynamics, we tout the grants and research work of our community that, like, you can't call Fidelity and find out who's doing early childhood services in some small town in Oregon, right? And then we have a whole research department that we share their research with donors, and then we also do special research for donors. So that's part of the way we are differentiating it.
Yeah, thanks.
I have a question. This is Mary Kay from Milwaukee. Talking about family philanthropy, the issue of successor advisors and allowing for unlimited generations, has that been an issue? Does everyone offer that? Are there tiers at which it's offered? I'd like to hear from some folks if you can speak to that successor advisor piece.
I'm happy to start if you'd like. It's Jennifer again from Oregon. When we were founded, our board set a two-generation limit, and we've had that for a long time with some exceptions. There are some older funds. There are a handful that have perpetuity, and we will negotiate an additional generation for, like, a certain amount, so it's conversation, but the norm is two generation limit.
Okay. Yeah, this is Abby from Chicago, and we also do two generations. What we're finding is a number of our funds are endowed, so once the two generations have passed, you know, the trust will continue to make grants the way the family had, and if family members are, we've had, in fact, one family I'm thinking of where while they're not successor advisors in the agreement, we indicate that we will reach out to the family to have them participate in the process and just share the ideas with them. But also we've had a couple instances where, you know, someone, the second generation, will then use that and make a grant into a brand new fund, and that'll create sort of the next two generations. Or, you know, sometimes a parent will set it up and then it's going to, upon their death, it feeds into new donor advised funds for the kids. So there, I think there's ways to work within that two generation, but it just keeps it manageable to know that there's two, and it manages expectations with the families.
Okay.
You know, this just as a little side, one of the examples we always... You know, we always give the example of the MacArthur Foundation that, you know, it's a private foundation, but, you know, years and years and years later, the grants that they make are not even remotely related to the original intentions of John and Catherine MacArthur. So it sort of dispels the idea for some family members that if they don't do it for longer, they can't continue on. And so we use that as an example of, you know, you can try to set up the best tools, but you can't really manage from the grave anyway. So you have to at some point have faith that it's gonna, that the community foundation can pick that up better than anyone.
Mm-hmm. This is Lauren from Seattle. We allow for unlimited successor advisors. We've been around for almost 75 years. I'm not sure. I know we're into G3 with some, but probably not many beyond that I'm super aware of, at least. And I think we've had some challenges with succession, but that isn't always related to, it could be the succession from G1 to G2 that we're having a problem with. I think it mostly emphasizes we need to do our work and really meeting with the donors and having clarity around what their expectations and intent are, and also helping them build in flexibility and when possible so that we can have some flexibility about sometimes that next generation just isn't going to work well together and we may need to step in and split the fund. Like it's going to be the case that they're not set up to do that well together, even with our best managing family dynamics trainings. We've tried everything and it's a dysfunction. It's just not working. And it's not benefiting community either to have that many couples happen. So I don't know. I guess time will tell. And I feel like we're still early days in how many generations we're going past. But I think we have seen a division of funds before that can be a solution to if there's way too many folks to engage.
What other questions do you guys have for each other? It can be anything from, you know, how many FT do you have? How did you get support? I think this is fair game. And I think also when many of you get started, you do these calls to each other. So this was my goal, was to insource and leverage some of the time, but also you might not know Lauren's awesome question or Treat's awesome question, you know, so also leveraging that knowledge and questions you guys have today. So what other questions do you guys have for each other? I know some of you guys have asked me. Or other people.
I guess I would ask, because it sounds like people are working with professional advisors pretty seems pretty closely, and we do, but do you folks have strategies of reaching out to professional advisors that you don't know? Like we have some that we know very well and that know us very well, and they're constantly bringing us people, but I think expanding that universe, do folks have good strategies for that outreach?
We offer what we call our PACE series, which is Professional Advisor Continuing Education. So we'll host 2 to 3 workshops a year where professional advisors in our community can receive continuing education credits for attending, and we usually do it over lunch. It has some charitable focus. So it's a great way that we can serve the professional advisor community with a service that benefits them, but get them in our doors and familiar with what we're doing. We do also a lot of what we call lunch and learns. We have our road show, if you will, where our gift planning team goes out on the road and takes, you know, an hour during lunch at a professional advisor firm that we're wanting to build a relationship with to do a presentation. We'll sometimes bring a great tool, interactive tool, like a 2164 tool or one of ours, and do it with them so they can really experience one of the cool benefits of partnering with us to serve their clients. And we'll host happy hours. So we try to be a convener because professional advisors network amongst each, you know, themselves as well.
Yeah.
And to also learn about what we're doing.
And we in Akron, we also work really closely with our professional advisors. In fact, Laura, who's in charge of the Professional Advisor Committee, also does those continuing education programs where they get credits. But we also have an outside investment program where professional advisors can become an investor, and then they are allowed to continue to manage the money of their client who in their donor advised fund here. So that by opening a fund with us, they're not losing control of managing those assets. And that's been very successful for us. And we're hoping to expand that program even further by possibly lowering the dollar value to be able to manage the investments or be able to pool clients together to meet the minimum requirement.
Interesting. Thank you.
This is Jennifer in Oregon, and our development department They do the bulk of the professional advisor work. We sometimes go with them for the kind of lunch that Lauren talked about. Our professional advisors also, they have a tiering system for how they're tracking relationships with professional advisors, like the ones who've made a number of referrals down to ones we don't have much outreach with. We're going to be doing this summer an overhaul to kind of figure out where we can go back to some and talk about family giving. And then we don't do individually managed funds as much. We'll do it at a certain price, but we're looking, like we've been talking to some wealth managers about the possibility of coming in and doing a write your mission statement workshop with their clients, for example, and a way to maybe come into the wealth managers and do some service for their clients without them feeling anxious that we want to take the money out of their investment.
Yeah. Thank you. That's really helpful. I appreciate it.
Do you guys have any other questions for each other?
Okay, I'll throw out one more. Very specific, but I've been thinking about doing a family philanthropy event around how to talk to your kids about race and privilege as Seattle Foundation has become more explicit on centering equity in our work. And I'm just wondering if anybody has great leads and books, national speakers, you know, that might be really wonderful to bring out for a great event. Certainly we have some local folks who I'm thinking about tapping, but if that's a work, has anyone hosted an event on that or a workshop on that? And has there been any, you know, this is kind of uncharted as we push on racial equity, push further into this space. It's how do we bring our donors along for the journey, but also make it an accessible thing and not triggering and, you know, that balance. So I'm just, that's just my last question, I guess.
First of all, Lauren, God bless you for getting that out on the table. And it's the $64,000 question. Well, for those of us who are old, that used to be a lot of money, sorry. We all, as a staff, we just read the book Decolonizing Wealth by Edgar Villanueva. I don't know if you read that, but it's definitely worth a read for those who haven't. And we're trying to get him to come and speak and hopefully get some of our donors there. We're all very worried about that. But like you, I think we all feel like we've got to start that conversation somehow, somewhere, some way. But I would love to hear, so other than that, I don't have any specific suggestions, but I would love to hear as you're going your way through that, I'd love to keep in touch because we are struggling with that question internally on our staff and just how do we bring it to the donors and how do we have hear that message because it's pretty tough. I've done a lot of reading about like resource generation, which actually started this conversation a long time ago. And I didn't even realize how kind of cutting edge it was until I was revisiting some things that were published in like 2008. And I thought, wow, scales have fallen from my eyes. And I think we're just further along in the public discourse about wealth and where it came from and white privilege and all of that. But, a lot of our donors are not quite, they're not necessarily thinking that. So I would love to hear more as you explore that.
What was the name of the book?
The book that we all just read as a staff is called Decolonizing Wealth by Edgar Villanueva.
Okay.
And he's actually a Native American who has worked in the philanthropic sector for years at various large and small foundations. And so he makes a cogent argument. I mean, he really traces it in a very, I found it very accessible, but also It was a really well, a well-constructed argument that he had about how do we get to the bottom of all of this. I mean, essentially, a huge systems change would be needed in the United States of America, which the cynical side of me, wonders how we will ever get there. But again, maybe if some of us in the philanthropic sector will chip away at this problem, who knows?
This is Bob Eichinger with Chicago, and Edgar spoke to a large group here in Chicago last fall. The Chicago Community Trust didn't sponsor it, but was a partner in it, and I thought his presentation was really good. It was entertaining. It wasn't, it can be scary to those who are not ready for it, but I think he's a really good presenter.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad to hear you say, because our claim to Edgar, we were very proud that this foundation, Triangle Community Foundation, made a scholarship grant to him many years ago when he was going to college. And so I think we all feel, some pride and none of us, we're hoping that we'll be able to get him here, and I'm sure he will come. He's from North Carolina, but it's good to hear that you had a good experience. Mm-hmm. So thank you for letting me know that.
Sure. Lauren?
Yeah.
Hi, this is Heather Pruis, OCF. Good to see your face.
Hi, Heather.
Hi. Hi, Jennifer. I'm curious about whether you've thought about Robin DiAngelo, who wrote the book on white fragility. I believe she's in Seattle, but I have a friend who last week they did a workshop with her here in Portland, and he said it was amazing. So it was an appropriate environment.
That's great. Yeah, we've got a list of some folks who we think are, we know are in town. And it's so early phases, probably isn't going to happen until next year, but. Yeah, I think we're looking, one of our goals on our strategic, our strategies this year is really to think about how do we, in a more comprehensive way, into our advising practice. So that's going to involve a lot of different
automatically goes back down.
Pieces of work. So not just donor learning events, but how do we be with it in our conversations with donors and it's an exciting body of work for sure.
I will say we'll have speakers. Edgar will be speaking at the forum, you guys. So for anybody coming, he'll be there. But also our Engaging Next Gen Peer Network, for example, at the forum will be tackling equity. So if you guys are looking for speakers around different parts of it, we're going to have kids talking about equity coming soon. We've hit 3:00. A couple of you have exciting backgrounds coming soon, probably because your next meeting is starting. Does anybody have a closing question, or should we let you guys get to your next meeting question topic? I think we are voting to dismiss so that you guys know. Have a great, great Tuesday. Bye.
Thank you. Bye, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Katie.
Thank you. Bye-bye.